found out it was Friday. So anyway, if there's anyone that has any questions, we have a little basket that we pass around. And I've actually gotten some questions on email, too. So if anybody has any questions, because that's kind of how we do it. We just say if anybody has anything they want to say or ask, it's kind of a ishtagoshtu format. If anybody noticed, but there was a flower that fell from Radharani's hand, and I think everybody thinks it was for them. But since I think it was for me, I asked her to get it for me. It just fell. And if anybody wants to share it that also thinks it's for them, well, please come up here and get part of it. Some of it? Did you feel that was for you too? You did, didn't you? I was praying for help. I've been in such a, it's been one of those insurance days. I can just tell a couple of things that are very significant that I was thinking of this week. And one of it is that Srila Prabhupada used to say that if you're going to do something good, something auspicious, do it immediately. And if you're thinking of doing something that's not so auspicious and not so good for you, put it off as long as you can. And believe it or not, that little philosophy helped me through my early years of Krishna consciousness. Because we're always, in the beginning, thinking of, I'm sure you know, thinking of alternatives when the pressure is intense. And that little, I was thinking about that little bit of philosophical how do you live your life from Prabhupada, you say, if you're thinking of anything good or anything auspicious, simply do it immediately. But if you're thinking of doing something not so good for you, that's not so auspicious, just put it off. In other words, if you tell your mind no, your mind is going to rebel like anything and give you a very hard time. But if you just say, well, we'll do that tomorrow, or the next day, or the day after, or maybe next week, if we just put it off. And so that's an interesting bit of Krishna conscious, how to live your life directly from Srila Prabhupada. And that was a great help to me. I think it would be a great help to a lot of young devotees who are struggling with the first year or so of Krishna consciousness. Is it okay to be attracted to the writings of acharyas that came before Srila Prabhupada? Well, I think that anything that's written about the Lord, if it's a bona fide sampradaya, there's not a problem. The problem, of course, is that our understanding may be limited because Srila Prabhupada more or less wrote for the people of this age. However, if you're of Indian origin, and I think this question is coming from someone of Indian origin, religion, they probably have a lot more connection with the culture. And I know there is one wonderful letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote, that he said that all of the sampradayas should work together to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So he had respect for the Sri Sampradaya, for the Rudra Sampradaya, for the, you know, Nimbarka, all the other sampradayas. It's not like he didn't. He did. It's just that our sampradaya is Gaudiya, and his way of teaching is to the, actually to deliver the entire world in a more simplified manner, chanting the holy names. But I don't see any, as long as you don't get confused by them, I don't see a problem with that. I mean, this is kind of something that isn't really in my league. There may be somebody who has some scholar somewhere who has vehement objections to this. If so, please forgive me. But to my understanding, Prabhupada had great respect for all the sampradayas. He went to Tirupati temple, and at Tirupati he said, this is good, the people are pious, they're coming to God for something, usually something material, health or wealth, but still they're coming to God. And he was very appreciative of the Devasthanam, the way that the management was done, and actually said we should manage our organization like that, because it was so, it's so well done. So I hope that was sufficient answer, was it? Or is it, did I hit upon what you're getting at? I should probably say which acharya. Acharyas. Oh, I thought he meant other sampradayas. But anyway, I don't see a problem with that. Why, Prabhupada, he talked about, I mean, his works are full of Vishnu, you know, Narottamda, so many acharyas his works are full of. So that shouldn't be a problem. There's a lot worse things to be doing. Is there more questions? You have something? No. I can usually hear Sri because she really enunciates, you know, but still sometimes I can't hear her. I'm working on the hearing aid. I can also, there's a very nice story that Prabhupada was taking a walk around a lake in Seattle, and it was very interesting because it's a big lake and you walk all the way around it, right? And so he was like rounding it, and there was a guy fishing in the lake, and he was sitting there fishing, and just as Prabhupada came right up to him to pass him, he pulled a fish out of the water. And he immediately offered the fish to Prabhupada. He said, would you like a fish? You know? And Prabhupada was so gentlemanly, so polite. He said, no, no, you take. You enjoy. And then he walked a little ways, lover, and he said, and suffer. I thought that was a very, nice. Nice for me. Oh, you didn't hear what I just said? But maybe that person was not receptive to Krishna, you see. We may not be able to see, but Prabhupada could see who's receptive and who's not receptive. And actually, it's if a great devotee, like a great acharya, like Srila Prabhupada, gives you instructions and you don't do them, it's worse for you. So I don't think the man was going to not eat fish by Prabhupada telling him to eat the fish. He was he was not open, so to speak. He was just a fisherman. Did you understand what I mean? Perhaps he got some benefit for that mood of offering that fish. I don't know. I just know that's what happened. I can't read the mind of Srila Prabhupada, decide what he should do or not do. That's one thing I know better than to do. But apparently that was what happened. Yesterday, several guests asked why we bow down in different directions. We never used to do that. Well, I think one of the main reasons is because there's no place to fit. At least that's what I would think, isn't it? I mean, generally, we try to bow down so we don't put our feet to the deities or to Srila Prabhupada. That's how I think. And sometimes there's just no other place to do it. That's why I would imagine that, generally speaking, we put our left side to the deity. Right. If you look at any videos of Srila Prabhupada coming into the Los Angeles temple, you'll see that he bows down with his left side to the deity. And when we do artic, we do with our left side to the deity. That's just normal, common. And I always try to keep my left side to the deity, but I can't always because I have to come in that door. But I at least try not to put my feet to Prabhupada or my feet to the deity because it's an aparad. So that's what I would say. There's just not much room, but yeah, there's it's a practical thing, and there's people all over. I think that's more. I don't think there's been any kind of change to that. Yes, you keep your left side to the deity when you bow. Yeah, definitely. You put your left side to the deity. I think it's in Nectar of Devotion. Isn't it in Nectar of Devotion somewhere? And also, from his example, he bowed down, and everybody followed suit. It was just like a wave. Everybody would bow down, just like they do in the morning, you know? They bow down, and then they bow down. The reason for that is because that's how he used to do it. Got some This is a loaded question. You want to get me shot? I also got one about the book issue here, too. What do you think is the main area ISKCON needs to improve? Who am I to say? I'm not running it. As far as I'm concerned, Srila Prabhupada's running it. And we're just temporarily managing it. And whenever it gets mismanaged, the managers gets changed. That's what I observe, right? Every few years, the whole management and the whole thing changes. So I really feel that I know that Prabhupada's looking over it, and he's watching over it, he's guiding in a direction. And his vision is far beyond mine, far beyond all of us. So however he's taking it, in whatever direction, not a blade of grass, remembers? So that's kind of how I see it. But so far as saying what the main direction is, you know, I also got I got one question so far as I got a couple of them, actually, because the thing is that, see, this is supposed to be like a forum about Srila Prabhupada, and it's not really supposed to be about any kind of controversial issues, because it's not intended to be a place for discussing political controversies or issues, because those things come and go. If you look back at history, you see the history of the United States, the history of America, the history of Russia, the history of ISKCON. You'll see that there's always, politics are always changing, and so there's always new and different and varied controversies, because it really keeps people entertained, or fighting, or whatever. But those are things that are kind of temporary, and what's popular and fashionable today, maybe not popular or fashionable in 5 years or 2 years, or what was popular or fashionable 5 years ago. You've already seen so many things. So if we spend too much of our time or of our lives focusing on the ups and downs of whatever is politically correct or not correct or in fashion or not in fashion, it's kind of a waste of time. Because our lives are short, and they should be focused on the eternal, and not whatever is popularly accepted at the moment. Because whatever is popularly accepted at the moment may be completely kapakahi, that means upside down in Hawaii. Kapakahi means totally upside down. And in the future. So what we need to focus on, and what the idea of this forum that I'm trying to present is to remind us of the eternal aspect of things, the eternal connection with Srila Prabhupada, with the Acharya, the founder Acharya of ISKCON. I mean, he told us, I've given you everything. And we need to remember that and not get caught up in little pettiness, or we think it should be this way or that way. None of these temples existed. This whole way of life that we are so accustomed to, that we take for granted, worshiping the Tulsi every day, having prasadam, talking about Krishna, reading the books, none of this existed 45 years ago. None of it. And now, look, it's like a whole way of life, and we've got all these young people and children and little grandchildren. And so we need to try to see the higher picture, the overall view, that from his perspective, we can be sure that he has thought of everything well in advance. And he foresaw everything also. He foresaw all of these ups and downs, the controversies, the misunderstandings, and there were indications of this even while he was president. So I'm trying to avoid getting into too many controversial issues. For example, I got a question about the book editing controversy, why Prabhupada's disciples are so upset about it, and why did they cling to the original books and everything. And all I can say is that it's really not the forum for that. However, the only way I can think of to answer it in a gentle, non-controversial way is that if you have a grandfather or a grandmother or a mother or a father, and they leave this world, and they've maybe they've written a book or kept a journal or something, every nuance, because of so much love for that person, every nuance of their writing, even if they misspelled a word, is precious. It's very precious to you. And then if you have a cousin who comes along who's really well-intentioned, and he says, well, we got to make these things perfect, let's clean up the spelling, you know, it creates dissension in the family. And so that's the best way that I can answer that without really getting into a discussion extensively. Because like I said, we need to try to focus more on the eternal aspect of our relationship with Srila Prabhupada. It's true that if you go to the homes of practically all of the senior devotees, you will find that they all have Prabhupada's original books, and they, because they're attached. They're attached to him, they're attached to the personal presence, and any little memory. I used to serve him watermelon in the afternoon, and he would always say, you can give me little water lemon. Never once did I even think of correcting him and saying, no, it's watermelon, not water lemon. And sometimes he would say, do you have any of that antelope? Well, that means cantaloupe. Well, I never considered saying, it's not antelope, it's cantaloupe. You see. So it's a question of love. And I can just say, as Prabhupada's disciple, that we feel the presence of his personality in those books, and any reminders that we have of how lovable he is, because he's such a wonderful, lovable person. I mean, I lived in his presence for over a year. I don't know how I can stand to go on living now. It must be I have a really hard heart, because it was the sweetest time of my life. It was really wonderful, really, really wonderful to wake up every day, and the first thing you think about doing is I've got to get the room cleaned, got to get the water changed, got to get the breakfast ready, so whenever he gets back from his walk, everything is here. And that's a wonderful life. So I don't want to get into controversial stuff. At the same time, sometimes whenever people don't discuss things, they fester and they get worse. And I've seen that happen on a lot of issues over the last, since Prabhupada left, where people don't want to talk about it, they don't want to discuss it. If you dare discuss it, ooh, they smack you down like a fly. But eventually, it explodes. We had that happen a number of times over different things, the 11 guru issue, so many. So it's, I think as a general rule, it's probably better to try to avoid these things and not get into too many internet fist fights over it, but to try to look at it from the point of view, and I know this is difficult, look at it from the point of view of Srila Prabhupada. What would he want? Not what would we want, but what would he want? And try to delve in to every aspect of his movement. It is his movement. He is the founder of Acharya. Delve into and study whatever he had to say about every issue, Varnashram, his books, his temples, and try to go back to what he had in mind in every respect. And I think there are people now doing that more and more. I think the young people are definitely doing that, because it's just so easy. Maya's tendrils are so powerful. For example, there's the word Sankirtan, glory to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for lifetimes or years and years and years. You know the translation. Everybody does. That's like the nucleus, the central core of the entire Hare Krishna movement, the Sankirtan. So then ask yourself, what did Lord Chaitanya mean by Sankirtan? Did he mean distributing stickers on the street? Or did he mean group chanting of the holy name? And when you really come down to it, you see Lord Chaitanya, he's always with his associates dancing and chanting. Not portrayed as a sannyasi, and not portrayed so much in any other way as, of course, in Chaitanya Charitamrita he is, but we worship him as a householder doing sankirtan, because Prabhupada's transliteration for the word sankirtan in the Bhagavatam is chanting the holy names of the Lord in group assembly, and that's what it is. It's, and yet, if you walk up to anyone and ask them, they will tell you that sankirtan means something else, and Harinam means that, which usually means on the street. So if in only 35 years you can have semantic change like that, you could have a lot more changes. And the thing is that what that does is it relegates sankirtan to a lesser position. By sankirtan, the group chanting of the holy name means our breath, our prana. Krishna wants our breath. He wants our chanting and our breath. It's an offering. And that is the Yuga Dharma. I have iPods. I can listen, one in my purse, one at home. CD players, I can listen all the time. But there's a difference between that and offering the breath, offering the prana. And so these are just some of the kind of things that I've observed that are changes, subtle changes, very subtle. And another one someone was telling me about recently, and I remember this happened while Prabhupada was present. Somebody started getting a little creative with the chanting, and Hare Ramo. Have you heard this? And Prabhupada said, what is this Ramo? And this is another example. And see, this is not like somebody's planned idea. There's no conspiracy theory here, folks. This is Maya's conspiracy, where she makes these subtle changes that cheat the conditioned soul. And so that's kind of what... it's a touchy topic, but it's related to what we were just discussing, any kind of controversial thing, that if there are changes, it may be that the changes are really well-intentioned. Maybe somebody thought that sounded really cool. You know, Ramo, you know what I mean? Maybe somebody thought that was really a good sound. But the point is, it's a change. And if you change things a little bit every year, in 100 years, you're going to have 100% change. And that is the danger. And so many things like that, and they happen, nobody notices them, hardly. I think the early devotees notice these things because they go, well, where did that come from? Or how did that happen? Because they weren't, it wasn't like that when Prabhupada was here. And so I think the important thing to stress is that we realize that we're conditioned souls. I don't know, maybe somebody else in this room is liberated, but I'm not. And we understand that Srila Prabhupada isn't a conditioned soul. He told us, I came from Krishna Loka. And there have been so many experiences of so many devotees. I was in Vrindavan once, and one of the very pious Brijbasis, older Brijbasi, was saying, he's one of the market, they have stores in the market, but they're very saintly. He was saying, who knows who he is, that he can turn the hearts of millions of people. And so this is from an outside perspective. From inside the Sampradaya, we understand that he is the Senapati Bhakta, that was predicted by Lord Shiva, by Narada, by Srila Bhaktivinoda, and we understand that he has great potency beyond anything we can imagine, and therefore it'd probably be better if we kind of kept everything just as he introduced it, because he was very adamant about that. He was always calling the Westerners and their change disease. One time, oh my God, this is outrageous. We had a devotee come to see him in Hawaii. And Prabhupada gave so much instruction to this devotee about the doll, making dolls, making the sculptures. He really, this is one of his favorite projects, the doll museums. It was something his spiritual master had introduced. The sculptures, you know, you see the dioramas, you know what I'm, they call them dolls, but they're not dolls. They're dioramas. They're works of art. But the nickname was doll making. It's a bad name for it, really, because it's a very advanced form of sculpture, relief sculpture. And so this devotee was an artist. And so he came there, and Prabhupada gave him detailed instructions about making these sculptures. And at the end of it, he said, you know, my wife, she wants to weave silk, but you have to kill the silkworm at the end to make silk. And he wanted to know about this. And when he left, Prabhupada was so discouraged, or disgusted, I would be a better word. He said, these Western boys, next they will be asking me if they can kill cows to make mridangas. And that was what he dealt with, you know, that such a creative spirit always wanted to change and improve and make it better and do it good. And, you know, and this is a big problem, even if the intention is good, even if there's really well-intentioned mood, which I think most of the time there's a danger that you can screw things up. I mean, I did. I corrected him once, and I'll never do that again. I think I told you about the time that he was going to be speaking in a record album, the record album, Radhika Krishna album, the one with the introduction to Brahma Samhita by his spiritual master, which is the materialistic demeanor cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat. Everybody's familiar with this. And it's kind of a big, wordy kind of essay. And so I typed it up, and he sat and practiced it a couple of times, because there's, you know, it's kind of a mouthful so far as the sentences. They're real long and everything. And so, because I was thinking that, you know, he's going to be on a record album that the whole world's going to hear, I want to make it where he puts his best foot forward and it should be perfect, right? So I said, after he read it a couple of times, I said, Srila Prabhupada, I think that word is pronounced analogously, because he was pronouncing it analogously. And he looked at me with a lot of fire and said, you pronounce it your way, and I'll pronounce it my way. So I think that that was a good instruction. I would never do that again. And I didn't have a bad intention. I wasn't trying to be greater than my guru. I wasn't trying to, show up, or what do you call it? I wasn't being a one-upman, but I was really sincere. But yet it was obviously an offense. It was an apparat, because there's a principle that actually Prabhupada mentioned this principle once. It's a Sanskrit word, is arsha prayog, which means you never correct your guru. You never ever try to correct what he has to say. And I did it, and it didn't work out too well. But of course, you know, he knew I was a foolish young girl and my intentions were good. I wasn't like evil trying to do anything bad, but he let me know that it was not the correct thing to do, that I made an offense, and he forgave me. So, you know, But what we have to do is try really hard. This person is asking the main area that ISKCON needs to improve. Maybe this is the main area. Maybe all we need to do is focus more on exactly what Prabhupada gave us, what he said, what he did, what he wrote, what he spoke, everything, in as exactly an unchanged fashion as we can possibly get, and then and try to hold it in this way, so that future generations don't get cheated by our by Maya's subtle changes, because these are actually look at it this way: you change the pronunciation of the mantra and the mantra loses its effect. Even now, Prabhupada has told us that there are 32 syllables in the mantra, and you have to pronounce every one of them. But yet we hear, and we do it, and so a lot of times we're not pronouncing the syllables, and so the mantra doesn't have the same effect. And so somebody's chanting hundreds of rounds, but are they really chanting hundreds of rounds, you know? So we have to think about it like that we shouldn't try to change the meanings of words. And I don't think that's what's so amazing. I've actually tried to find out the source of some of these changes, and I haven't been able to. Nobody knows. Nobody knows where Ramo came from. Nobody knows where Sankirtan means everything but group chanting of the holy name. Nobody knows, because it's not any one person. It's Maya's tendrils for cheating the conditioned souls. That's how it works. That's your job. And one devotee, this was early on, this was actually in Santa Fe many years ago. It was the first time a devotee had left. A devotee's wife had actually left, and it was just really shocking to Srila Prabhupada. And of course, he was very upset. It was a very upset time because he wasn't accustomed to our American divorce rate, you might say. It was the first time one of the marriages that he put together broke, and she had left, and they were separate. So Prabhupada was very distressed by this, and he said, you know, this Maya is divine. This is Krishna's Maya. It's not ordinarily that someone can get out of this Maya, because she's divine. She's Krishna's energy. And actually, it's not amazing that someone leaves our company. What is amazing is that someone actually stays. So that gave me a better understanding of how powerful the material energy is. It's not something that we can... We are all, right now, the fact that we're still here after all these years, in spite of our ups and downs, and our personal ups and downs, our society ups and downs, our marital ups and downs, our every kind of ups and downs, we're still here at Prabhupada's lotus feet. We're still worshiping Krishna. We're still trying to be devotees. This is all grace. This doesn't have anything to do with us. This has to do with the grace of the Acharya and the grace of Lord Chaitanya, because he actually cares so much for the conditioned souls of this age that are short-lived and not so intelligent and easily misled and so forth. Well, I don't know how I got off on that, but I did. Are there any more questions? Question? Do you have a question? Well, then, maybe since no one has any questions, we should go to the party. At Nalini Kanta's house. There's a, you know, the young people, since there's no more questions. because we were going to kind of cut it short because not many people came because it was a big schedule mix-up. You look familiar. Who are you? Well, anyway, you look like some devotee, you know, I guess. Oh, we've got a question. No partying. I have to ask my translator what you said. Say something nice about Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada loved all of the little children. He gave them cookies, and he knew they were the future of his movement. And when he gave him that cookie, he didn't just give him a cookie. He gave him a smile, and he gave him the love from his heart. And if you ask those children, many of them still remember it. So he can still give you a cookie. You just give him a flower, and you will feel his smile. It may not be a physical cookie, but you don't need that anyway. You can get you that from your mother. But you can get his love, because he's very transcendental. He's present in his murti, and he's present in his books, his writings, his pictures. He told us that he's present in his pictures. I'm not present in my picture, and I don't know if you are, but I'm not. But he is. He's present in his picture, and really interesting. I had a girl many years ago who went through a very hard time, and she had lost faith. Fortunately, I think her guru had left or something like that. And I suggested to her that she just put a picture of Prabhupada on her altar and listen to his lectures. And then she came back to me later and she said, "You know, that works. That really works." And I thought, oh my God, what's happened to this movement? Of course it works. So anyway, because Prabhupada loved the little children. And he loved the children's books that I did too. He laughed and laughed and looked at each picture, and his favorite picture was Krishna with a butterfly. Do you have my Gopal coloring book? Yeah? I don't know. I don't even know myself where you can get them, but I'll find out for you. Unfortunately, we had a really good thing going with BBT many, many years ago. Tomahar was in charge at that time, and it was wonderful. I would print a book, and then the money from that book would go for printing the next book, and then the money from that book would go for printing the next book, and in that way, I got 5 coloring books printed, because nobody was interested in the children at that time, because children weren't a big thing. And so we had 5 books printed, and we used to be able to buy them from BBT, but then they got out of print, and so many things happened in history. But I'm going to see, but I think somebody's still printing them. They print them all over India, you know, you can get them in India. I lost control of that one a long time ago. Actually, I never had it. But Prabhupada did like them. And he wanted stuff for the children. He really did. I also did a Dhruva story, 25 color paintings of Dhruva story. And Prabhupada looked at each one of the paintings and commented on them and said it should be printed. Of course, it's never been printed because everything kind of fell apart. But one of these days, I'm going to get it printed. So... Oh, there's Parijata, and there's Agni Dev. Oh my gosh, I shouldn't be sitting here. You should be sitting here. At least give him a chair. I mean, he's our senior most Hare Krishna Sankirtan. Now, here's the man who knows what Sankirtan is about. He knows that Sankirtan is the group chanting of the holy names. It doesn't mean stickers. It means the holy names. And so he's a great Kirtan leader. Really... in Laguna Beach. I don't know where you're located now. Where are you located now? Oh, you're in Trinidad. Well, I bet they got some good kirtans in Trinidad then. So are there any more questions? It looks like it's almost time to... I'm a little old and deaf here, so you have to... Yeah, what we do is we... Some people may be shy, or maybe they want to ask something that might not be politically correct, or maybe they'll be embarrassed or something. So we just have them write them down, but you don't have to write it down, you know, and that way you don't have to write it down, but we just give them that opportunity. It was a suggestion by one of the devotees, but I don't guarantee I'll be able to hear. You have to, she'll have to use your kirtan voice. It's not working. Here, you can use this one.
Haribo. Being Prabhupada's servant for some time in the early days, and Prabhupada having the background of a chemist, I wanted to know if he shared with you any like medicinal remedies, because he was everything. He was doing everything for the devotees.
Ayurvedic medicine. Oh yes, he was a pharmacist, but an Ayurvedic pharmacist. What does this sound? What does this sound? Is there a spaceship? I'm sorry, we're trying to figure out if there's a spaceship landing on the roof or something here. Yeah, we went over a lot of those the other day in the last session. We talked about some home remedies for cold. His best remedy would be to have a cup of hot water and a big chunk of ginger root. And you take a bite of ginger root and then a sip of hot water. And then a bite of ginger root and a sip of hot water. And it's like a fire goes off in your head. And your sinuses drain, your eyes water. Because the ginger makes the water hotter. And it works better than herb tea. If I'm sick with a cold, I still do that same treatment. So that rather than, you know, they make this Brahmastra tea, which is also good. But if you do that alternating thing, it's amazing. And Prabhupada was very skeptical of Western medicine. I think that's why I've turned out like this, very skeptical of Western medicine. My mother's 95. She'll be 95 in December. She's on no pharmaceuticals, and she's very healthy. And the doctors would have her on 9 or 10 junk medicines. So a chemist, so what were his medicinal? So that was this you wrote. Okay. So also he had some things that he invented himself. Days on liniment, days, you remember days liniment, right? And he also was very, very critical of how Western medicine worked. He used to tell me, and this is so difficult, but the fact is that I was only 21, and he had been, as you know, in the hospital. And the year that I took care of him, he had just got back from India. He had had the stroke, or the heart attack. Achyutananda says it's a heart attack, not a stroke. He had the heart attack, and then he tried to get well in America, and then he went to India for several months. Then he came back to America, and from that time in December of 67 till 69, we were with them traveling, and he had a lot of health problems at that time. But he was so skeptical of Western medicine, he used to tell me, Govindasi. He didn't say Govindadasi, he said Govindasi, always. Or sometimes he had a pet name, Govindarani. But Govindasi, if I become sick, you don't call any doctor, you don't call any hospital. You let me die peacefully chanting Hare Krishna. I'm glad I didn't have to honor that instruction, because that would have been a really difficult one. But when he did go to the hospital, they were very abusive to him. Very horrible. They did a spinal tap. Now, any doctors in the house, they know what a spinal tap is. It's a horrible, horrible test where they stick a big needle in your spine and they take out the spinal fluid. I don't know why they do it, but it causes headaches for years afterwards. It's a very horrible thing. So anyway, he didn't have a lot. He mostly used Ayurvedic medicine, and he used to get these big packages in the mail of baryolite, which is a big kind of a funny looking nut. I don't know what it is. It's an herb. It looked like a cross between a Brazil nut. You know what it is? A Brazil nut and a rock. Yeah, Brazil nut and a rock. That's what it looked like. And I think it was Narayan Maharaj used to send him packages of his medicines, because he didn't have many people in India that he knew, but they would send him these packages. They would take forever. You have to remember, back in 1967-68, we didn't have any contact with India. India was a long way away. You couldn't hardly make phone calls that worked, and it was very, it was a different time. Now it's like so much contact. And so we would grind these up, and he would have this medicine that they would send to him. The Kaviraj would send, and I guess his friends would send them. And he never took Western medicine. He always took Ayurvedic medicine. And I think that's why I've got the attitude that I have about it. I saw a God sister last night at CVS. I wasn't there for medicine. I was there to get an ice pack and a toothpick. But she was taking so many pharmaceuticals. It was really tragic, because that's what the doctors do. They put so many pharmaceuticals in the person's body that pretty soon they can't even function, you know. It's really... And so I think it's important that devotees know what Srila Prabhupada thought about Ayurvedic medicine and about Western medicine, especially now in this day and age of vaccines. Some of the vaccines, let's see, I just read an article, 25,000 times more mercury in a flu shot than the EPA recommends for mercury contact. And flu shots are poisonous. And there's people constantly having terrible reactions. And now, it wasn't as demoniac in those days as it is now. But yet, Prabhupada was so suspicious of Western medicine. And let's see, what other Ayurvedic things did he recommend? Well, every day he had to have a chunk of ginger root on his plate before he had his fruit. It would be like two big chunks, about this high, this thick, round, you know. And he would eat them before eating the fruit, because he would have fruit for breakfast. Sometimes I would forget to put them on, and I would come running in the room with them, and he says, no, it's too late. It has to be eaten first on the empty stomach. So I don't know why that is, but that was his there's so many things. Moong dal, the khichdi for balancing the life, the doshas, what is it called now, the three. And I mean, he talked in terms of Ayurveda medicine long before Deepak Chopra ever landed here. So, I mean, Deepak Chopra put Ayurveda on the map, which is really nice. He did a service in that respect. But Prabhupada was already talking about it way back, back then. And there were so many things that I've noticed that he saw that nobody else saw. Like he used to say, he used to make fun of dry milk. It was very popular back in the 50s. Powdered milk was real popular. Non-fat dry milk. You remember how popular. Oh, that was the greatest thing. And he said, what is this? This is nonsense. The milk has no value. And actually, years later, it was discovered, or the scientists finally figured it out, that milk without some fat, you couldn't absorb the calcium from it. And so many things like that, that he was just so way ahead of him, way ahead of the times, so far as medical situations and so far as health situations. I mean, I like cold milk. I was raised on cold milk. And cold milk is really bad for you. And he made it very clear that milk should always be drank hot and sipped, just sipping it, not even like that, drinking down. And he said, otherwise, it just turns to urine. But if you want it to go to your brain, you have to drink it very hot. And so I just, you know, sometimes I'll do it, whether it's whatever. But it's he understood. And you know, one time I even said something like, well, I always drank cold milk. Yeah, he said, and you're always sick. So what we're accustomed to doing, because our culture is accustomed to doing it, doesn't mean it's healthy. And when we're young, we can get away with murder, but we can't as we get older. As you know, things start breaking down, and we have to follow dietary rules a little better, and we have to be more cautious. I know one thing I've noticed here in this area, the water, I started getting arthritis the first few days I was here. And I noticed so many people, especially the ladies, have arthritis. The water is very, very hard. It has too much minerals in it. And so you have to use a purifier of some sort. So there are many things that he made us, you know, it's amazing because he was so far ahead of the whole health food industry, the whole new age environmental concept, all of the concepts that we have nowadays, even the concept of not wearing fur coats, which was very popular back in the 40s. I mean, if you could have a mink coat, that was like the thing to do. You know, everybody wanted a mink coat or a fur coat. Those of you who are older remember this. Well, right off, Prabhupada said this is a horrible thing, animal skins, you know. So, and now you have what? You have whole organizations that are promoting not killing animals for fur coats or not killing animals for anything, actually. One of my friends from Houston was just telling me about a new movie called Cowspiracy. Has anybody seen this yet? That it's supposed to be a really incredible Cowspiracy. And she said she had promoted it in Houston, meaning you call up and you can promote it in your hometown and it'll be shown at a theater. And there were so many people who appreciated it. And it's in keeping with our, you know, with a vegan or at least a non-animal harming philosophy. I haven't seen it, but all these things I see, they didn't exist before Prabhupada came here. I just see their waves of a big boat. You know, when a big boat moves through the water and the waves go for thousands of miles to another continent, they keep on going, they don't stop. And so sometimes maybe somebody might not be qualified yet to have the Sukriti to actually be a devotee, but they can get out there and fight for the fur animal rights, or they can get out there and fight for the cow rights, or for this. And it's all Sukriti. It's all wonderful that this whole culture has changed. And nobody heard of the word yoga where I grew up. You may have grown up in California. That's different. Even then, not very much so, but I grew up in Texas. Nobody ever heard of vegetarianism or yoga. I remember one mention of the vegetarian party when I was in, I think, high school or something. They teach you politics and they teach you about the Democrats and all this, and there was some mention of the vegetarian party, and everybody laughed because they thought it sounded like something crazy. I mean, that's what America was like before Prabhupada came. Anyway, I think we've gone over our time now, and it actually the chair is killing my back. So, have I answered everybody's questions? I think it's okay.